I'm at the Sunset Room, and you know, this crazy thing about losing fear of people and economic insecurity, it can really screw you up in meetings like this. Because you just try to you just try to love on people, that's all. You just want to love them and help them out. You know, so it's hard to stay to the script. You just do what the spirit tells you to do. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. So I'm at the Sunset Room one day. And, you know, Sheldon said, you need a big book? I said, just screw me up. You know what I mean? And so I'm at the Sunset Room, and some guy says, I had about 3 or 4 years, I don't know. And I'm sitting there with my sponsor, and it's packed. And some guy says, he introduces himself. He says he's brand new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says he's been going there for about 2 months. And he says he can't find anybody to talk to. You know, he doesn't have any friends. He feels like he's alone. Feels like nobody really cares about him, and he's been trying to stay sober, and he's having a real problem, and he's just lonely and he needs help. So the meeting ends, and I make a beeline for this son of a gun, you know what I mean? And I say, hey, listen, this is what we did at the Sunset Room on Saturdays. I said, listen, we're gonna go across the street to the diner over there. I forgot what it was, across the street from the Sunset Room. So the restaurant with me and my sponsor guys says, why don't you come along with us? And he says, thanks, but I'm going to go home and watch the game. And don't get ahead of me now. There's a lesson here. You know, I spent 8 years on relay in this town every Friday night for 12 hours fielding calls from anybody who wanted to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You learn a lot by talking to alcoholics. You know, there's a possibility that if you're an alcoholic, you might be sicker than you actually think you are. There's a possibility. I probably spent the first 10 years sober. You can't tell how sick you are if you're drinking. What you got to do is you got to get sober and then spend 10 years dealing with life as you slowly discover what this real frickin' disease is. It ain't the alcohol. Alcohol has nothing to do with it. Alcohol is just one of the symptoms. The real disease centers in your mind, not your body. Trust me, I was an alcoholic. You know, I talk from experience. I'm not trying to sell you anything, and I think I'm talking about the stuff in the big book, and I could be wrong. You check the big book out yourself. Don't believe me, but, you know, the bottom line is that the truth of my life is that I was an alcoholic long before I took my first drink, and I was an alcoholic during my drinking, and I've been an alcoholic for the last 40 years without the drink. And the bottom line is I drank alcohol because no woman, no car, no amount of money, no suit of clothes, no prestige. Although it worked, none of it worked just as well or just as fast as just a few drinks. And if I could drink alcohol all day and have it do for me what it did for me when I was 18 or 19 years old, I'd still be drinking it. But the deal with me is alcohol stopped working for me. And unfortunately for me, it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. I hurt a lot of people. So I went up to my sponsor, and that's what the first 10 years of AA was all about, learning what the real dis-ease is. You know, I don't know how long it took you. Maybe it takes 2 months, 3 months. You wake up in bed, you got a million voices. They're all saying shit like, you're an asshole, you ought to kill yourself. And you look around, and you're in the shower lathering up. Some voice says, you're never going to get this. You're a piece of crap, you know. And you look around to see who's saying that shit to you, and you're the only one in the shower, you know. You walk around telling yourself you don't give a crap what other people think about you, and sometimes you'll tell yourself, I don't give a shit what they think about me, and then somewhere along the line, maybe after you have 20 years, you start realizing that people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them never say, I don't give a crap what other people think about me. They say things like pass the ketchup, but they don't say that shit, you know what I mean? And you realize that your entire life, you've always been looking at other people and trying to figure out what they think about you and trying to make yourself look in some way so that you're acceptable, because you're not only an alcoholic, you're an acceptable holic. You're a please love me a holic, please don't reject me a holic. And you got all sorts of shit going on in your mind that's all about this alcoholism that lives in your mind and doesn't go away because you stop drinking. That's the real deal. You understand? That moves you around from place to place. This selfishness, this self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, stepping into the toes of others, they retaliate seemingly without provocation. You realize somewhere along the line, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, that you've made decisions based upon self. I mean, how are you going to get, if selfishness is the answer, how are you going to get rid of selfishness when you don't even see yourself as selfish? You think you're pretty much a good guy. You don't realize how fucking evil you are. You know, you learn by doing this thing. Life is a humbling experience. 8 years sober, you get hit over the head and you say, man, I really am an asshole. You realize that, I really can't stop thinking of myself. I can stop drinking, but I can't stop thinking. I really do just sit around worrying about what's going to happen to me and what's going to happen to you and all that shit. I am one sick puppy. And you try to get rid of that, and that ain't like putting a plug in the jug. You put the plug in the jug, it just gets worse. But it gets better. It gets worse, it gets better. It's kind of strange. So I say to my sponsor, what's with that guy? He made that whole speech about the deal, that nobody loves him or whatever the frick that is he's talking about. And my sponsor says this to me, because I didn't realize that. He goes, I actually thought that when people ask for help, this is crazy. So I actually have this idea when somebody asks for help, they actually want help. But of course, I don't know anything about the alcoholic mind. Unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, sobriety be precarious of true happiness, they'll find none at all. And there are consequences to being an alcoholic. When my first wife said to me, after 5 years of coming in at 3 o'clock in the morning and leaving her there with a wife and baby, because I was sitting in the bar looking at the women, wishing I could be with one of them. That's another story. I never physically cheated on my wife. I gave myself a real pat on the back for that. I just sat in the bar with a bunch of the homicide cops and a bunch of the other DAs and everything, just looking at the blondes and the redheads, wishing I could cheat on my wife. And then 3 o'clock I'd roll in. So when my first wife said to me, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm divorcing you on one Friday morning. And I was as sober as I am right now, physically sober. And she was just like delivering the mail. She wasn't even, I said, I just thought you ought to know. You come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was going for a PhD in algebraic topology. I became a division chief in the state's attorney's office. And the state's attorney's office, and I wasn't a dummy, you know, and she said that to me. 12 words. If you come home drunk, I'm leaving you. I walked out the door, I got in my car, and I drove 3 blocks, stopped at a light, and I said this. What the hell did she mean by that? Let me tell you something. When everything that's important to you and should have been important to you is right up there on the line, and somebody says 12 words, if you come, I'm drunk one more time, I'm leaving you, and that puzzles you, you're in for a long, hard road in life. You understand what I'm saying? But that's alcoholism. That's a consequence of alcoholism. Because when an alcoholic hears something, reads something, or told something, usually the truth, that they don't like, it confuses them. Sometimes it pisses them off. Sometimes they walk out of the room after hearing the one truth that will save their lives, and they say, who invited that asshole to speak? And then 8 years later, they come up to you and they say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. Because, you know, it's like T.S. Eliot said, we will not cease our searching. And in the end, after all our exploration, we'll come to the place that we began having known the place for the first time. And so all of a sudden, you have 5 years sobriety and you read the big book and you read a line in the big book that you've read 50 times, didn't think it applied to you, didn't mean anything, and all of a sudden, holy shit, that's the deal. And you change slowly. So I that's what I said to him. I said about the guy. I said, what's the matter with that guy? I went up to him and said, you need love. And he said, well, you know, Russ, some people want help and some people just want attention. So sometimes you got to ask yourself whether you just want attention. Sometimes you got to ask yourself, if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, and you're still chasing sex and chasing romance, and still worried about the things of this world, you got to say to yourself, or maybe you have to get a sponsor that says to you, Russell, when the fuck are you going to grow up? When are you going to become a man? When are you going to stop this bullshit? When are you going to stop being a 40 or a 50-year-old man acting like a stupid 13-year-old, chasing your dick around the town, doing stupid shit. When are you going to stop doing that stuff? You know, I mean, he used to say, why do you do the shit you do? Sober. Why do you say the stuff you say? Why do you do that? And I'd say to him, well, that's just my personality, which, quite frankly, I was in love with. And he said to me this. He said, well, let me tell you something. Your personality is killing you. I know how to stop drinking. How do you get rid of that personality? How do you do that? How do you become a grown-up? You know, because unless you learn how to become a grown-up, unless you stop worrying about what other people think about you, unless you learn the secret on this deal, which takes a long time and most people never make it, you will never stop worrying about money. You will never stop worrying about economic insecurity. And trust me, you will never stop worrying about the judgment of other people. You do it even today. You sit in your AA rooms and you're going to say something, but you don't say it because you're worried about what people think about you if you say it. You want to mention the word God or say something about God, but you're scared to do it because you think somebody will judge you or laugh at you. You spend more time worrying about whether you should say something or not say something, even if it's honest or sincere, or what you said or how you said it when you walk out of here. And that's all vapid, unbelievable fear that you can't get rid of, and it kills you in life. And that's in an AA room where they have God all over the walls, and we're supposed to lose fear of other people, and just a bunch of scared adults of everybody in the room, what they think about them. Because you can't even be yourself. Because one of the things that alcoholics, you know, when we talk about the symptoms of Alcoholics Anonymous and the things that really is alcoholism, and one of those things is such a desire to have people like you. So you're always watching other people and trying to figure out, what can I say, do, have, buy? I spent more money buying shit I didn't need with money I don't have to impress people I don't even like. Maxing out credit cards, because I would buy stuff because it would make me feel good. No, I don't drink alcohol. What I do is I just buy shit. Spend money. Do other stuff that's self-destructive. Carl Menninger, in the book in the 1930s, wrote a book called Man Against Himself. He said it was all about suicide. They have a whole chapter on alcoholics. He says alcoholics are men and women out to destroy themselves. You can give them anything. Give them everything. They'll figure out how to kill themselves. Give them fame. They'll figure out how to kill themselves. And that's the disease you're dealing with. And here's the really crazy thing about the disease. You have the disease, and one of the parts about the disease is you don't even see you have it. And the other part is, if you ever run into somebody, you don't realize how insane you are. By the way, you know that second step? We're on the first step. I go all over the place. Here's the deal. You know that second step thing? Came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore your sanity? Anybody, you got that in this group, the Sue Pump, right? So listen, let me suggest something to you. Now, this is like advanced. This trust me, I'm giving you advanced shit. This is advanced AA. That second step. Came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? Let me explain this. The only way you can be restored to sanity is you have to be insane. This is so fucking advanced. You see how quiet they are? They're trying to figure out what that is. That's like when my wife said, if you come home drunk one more time, they're trying. That's what he said. Some people want help. Some people just want attention. He said, that's the truth. If you had any idea how crazy you fucking are, how nuts you are if you have this disease, even as you're sitting there saying, this guy doesn't know me. No, actually, I do know you. I do know. After sponsoring hundreds of people, I think I know you. Here's what the problem is. You don't know you. You know, you're just trying to figure you out. And how you can get better. You got a million thoughts in your mind. How can I better? Why do I feel the way I do? When am I going to feel better? When am I going to stop feeling like an asshole? When am I going to feel good? If you're like me, and I'll tell you something, one of the old ideas of alcoholics is nobody could ever understand me. I'm so freaking unique. Nobody can understand. How can I explain? I can't even explain it to myself. Nobody can understand me. I'm an if-onlier and a yes-butter. Every day I get up and I say to myself, if only I had a new gal. If only my wife would change. If only I had a new car. If only I had more money. If only lost 50 pounds. If only, if I. And then I'd run around trying to get all that shit together, and I'd get it together. It would be great for like an hour, and then it's all fuck me again. It's all shit. You know what I mean? How much time do you have?
Wait.
You.
Today's 30 days.
30 days. You identify with this shit. You identify with this shit. You know why? That's fucking alcoholism, not the drinking. You drink because that's the way you drink. We drink because sobriety sucks. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, because the rest is irritable and discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort what comes at once by taking a few drinks. We drink because we're sewer-fucking-cidal, and we'd like to really blow our fucking brains out, and sometimes as you get weller in AA, drinking is out of the question, but suicide is looking pretty good. And if you're an alcoholic like me, you will walk around thinking, I wish I was dead or kill myself. But the great thing about drinking, it's like committing suicide, but you wake up. Because I wouldn't mind being dead and out of here. I just don't like the dying part. You understand what I'm saying? I want to skip that part, the not breathing part. You know what I mean? But you see, what I could do is I could take a bottle of scotch. I could do that, and I'm like gone. I'm dead until I wake up the next morning. You know what I mean? And that's the deal. That's alcoholism. So I can tell you, and then I drank, 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 and then and this happened, then I drank, and all our stories would be the same, and we all ended, then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank. And you would think that that's alcoholism, but that's not alcoholism. That's the symptom of alcoholism. Alcoholism is why you can't stand being sober. And so when you see a guy who's got 5 years, or 10 years, or 15, or 30 years, and you will see that in here. And he comes in and he says, I had 10 years and then I drank. I got 15 years and then I drank. I had 3 months and then I drank. He's not drinking because he craves alcohol. I understand the craving deal. I even understand the obsession deal, you know, because I had that. But when somebody after 3 months or 6 months is away from the alcohol and they go on a run again and they start drinking, that's not because they're craving alcohol because they had a first drink. The question is, well, why did the son of a bitch drink? And he'll say something like this. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped speaking to my sponsor. I stopped continuing doing the steps or whatever it is. And so you'll say this. Well, I got the answer. I'm just never going to stop doing that. I'm never going to stop going to meetings. But what you don't realize is that guy who drank, he was sitting where you were 5 years ago, and he said to himself, I just won't stop going to meetings. And yet he's still sitting. You got to ask yourself, don't you wish it was as simple as that? You could just make a pronouncement. I'm not gonna have a drink. Anybody ever say I'm not gonna have a drink today? How'd that work out for you? Yeah, you make a pronouncement, you really think you're powerful, right? You think you have power and willpower. I'm not gonna stop going to meetings. Wait till the redhead comes along. Wait till the baseball game comes along. Wait till the boss comes along, whatever it is. You know, wait till you get a little sobriety under your belt and you get too well and too fast. Wait till you get your car back and the money back and sleep in the big bed. Then we'll see what's going on with you. And you see, I mean, this is a serious disease. So, I mean, it's crazy. And I'm going to try to, explain this. Listen, one of the problems is that as an alcoholic, one of my old ideas is that nobody will understand me. And I'm different. And what I do is I come in here and I realize that everybody understands me. Because the only thing you have to do for a good AA meeting is be sincere. And once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. And just tell the truth. Because I've been to the convention. I've said this stuff. I told my story. People come up to me. Black people, white people, fat people, thin people. You know, I mean, really, women, men. You're telling my story. You're talking about me. No, I'm talking about me. We're all actually twins. You know, if you just knew about yourself, and learn about it and just tell the truth as to what's going on. You know, five people come up and say, man, you're talking about me. And you'll say, I wasn't talking about it. I'm talking about it because that's the deal. So if I've thought it, you probably thought it. If I've done it, you've probably done it. Some of the situations, the details might have changed, but it's no difference with the disease. The disease is actually the same. And to being rocketed in the fourth dimension, the great fact, the thing that gets you to that point, if you ever get to that point, that takes a little long. There's a big difference between not drinking and being sober. Trust me, a big difference. But that we'll get into later on. When my sponsors with 30, 40 years used to look at a man and say, that guy's sober, he didn't mean he was not drinking. A lot of people are not drinking, but they're not happy with their sobriety. They're not happy in life. They're not content. They're not at peace with themselves. They haven't lost the fear of people of economic insecurity. You understand what I'm saying? A lot of people are not drinking. There's a big difference between not drinking and having the promises working full-time every day, every second of your life. major difference between that deal, let me tell you. I can tell you that deal. So the bottom line, so here, it's real fast. I'm not going to go through the drinking stuff real fast, but the bottom, you know, am I selfish? So I fall in love with this gal when I'm 17 years old, 18 years old. I'm going to use, let me see what I was doing. I was maybe 20. I'm going to use some Miami. I was crazy in love with her. 20 years old, crazy in love, a lot of sex, right? Because when you're 18, 20 years old, that's all you think about. And so I was in love. You had sex with me, I was in love with you. You could be a fucking frog, it didn't matter. I was a lounge lizard. I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it, trust me, you know what I mean? And so I'm sitting there in the lounge. I'm the guy in the lounge. I'm like a Venus flytrap, you know? And I'm sitting there, and I'm in love with this gal, and we're seeing ourselves, you know, it's true alky love. You know, I really didn't know what love was until I came down Boston Arms. I really had no idea. Apparently, love is actually giving a shit about somebody else. Did you know that? I mean, it's true. Love is actually caring about. You know, when I first experienced love, and it was in AA, where some guy I didn't even know, and I had about 5 days sobriety, and they held up a white chip. They said, does anybody, some guy said before the meeting, he said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. And I had about 5 or 6 days sobriety and said, if anybody wants to stop drinking, they can pick up a white chip. I looked at the guy and I'm saying to my mind, pick it up. And he went to pick it up and I clapped and everybody else clapped. That's the first time I experienced true love. I never experienced that feeling ever before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. All I experienced is what I wanted. Sex, money, whatever, your approval, whatever. I never experienced really giving a shit. My sponsor once asked me, you know, how you doing? I said, great. He says, you must be getting your own way. And he was right. An hour later, I wasn't. I was pissed off. So I'm in love with this gal. And I do this. You got to forgive me. It's the senility thing. My wife actually had me tested. My wife's a member of Al-Anon, a lady of perpetual revenge. You know what I mean? She knows how to do an Al-Anon 10 step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it. So anyway, so she had me tested. This is true. She stood in front of me, between me and the TV, with her hands on her hips. She says, you never listen to a word I say. And I'm thinking, what a strange way to start a conversation. You know what I mean? But in any event, you know, so she actually tested my hearing. They said, no, his hearing's fine. Then she took me, I went to another doctor and they put me on a machine to see whether I had some sort of problem with my brain, because she said, you don't seem to pay attention to anything. You don't react to anything. You know, it's almost like I don't exist or stuff like that. So they gave me the brain thing. The guy said, no, he's fine. And, you know, for 40 years, well, at least 30 years at that time, I've been trying to get to a point where I'm not disturbed by life. And I finally get to that point. My wife thinks I'm senile. And I'm thinking she may be right, but it's okay. It doesn't feel so bad. You know what I mean? So what's the difference, you know? So the gal says to me, after going out for a year, her name was Lynn. She was in New Jersey. We were in the University of Miami. She said, my parents, who haven't seen me in a year, want me to go up to New York, New Jersey, and spend Christmas with them. And here's what I think, you know. I'm sure you guys never. I said this to her. I said, well, what about me? Well, what about me? What the hell am I going to do? What about me? And we have this major argument. Because what am I going to do on Christmas? What am I going to do on New Year's? And don't think I didn't know she had a boyfriend up there, an old boyfriend up there. I knew she was going to go to bed with that guy. I knew that was cool. I knew that, but yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm just going to do that. Sure, she's going to cheat on me, you know? And I'm dying, you know? So she left to be with her parents, her boyfriend, whatever. So I'm sitting there thinking about that bitch, you know? That I was in love with, by the way, you know? And Gus knows what I'm talking about. And so I have an idea. I have a brainstorm. Because alcoholics, we are brilliant. You know, and there was a card that I hadn't maxed out, so I figured I'm gonna buy a plane ticket and I'm gonna go up there and I'm gonna surprise her. What do you mean, Oak?
What?
You're like judging me? You know? Yeah. Gus never did that shit, you know what I mean? So I fly up there, and on Christmas Day, I knock on the door, and I say, hey, it's me. I'm here to ruin your Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, I call it love. The cops call it stalking. But, you know, what the hell they know, you know? What do they know, right? Am I selfish? I didn't think it was selfish. I thought I'm a caring guy. You know, that kind of deal. You know, that's my whole life. Thinking about me. What do I want? Getting what I want. Feeling so I'm a self-pityaholic. So I wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to have a drink today. By 5 o'clock, I'm drunk. You know, I wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to buy booze today. By 5 o'clock, I'm looking for dimes, nickels, and quarters so I can buy a quarter, half a gallon bottle of Carlos Rossi Cante and sit by my phonograph. Back then, we had phonographs. And I don't need music to feel sorry for myself and get drunk, but it sort of helps. You know, I play my Alky songs. I don't know if you had Alky songs. You know, Only the Lonely, I'm Mr. Blue, Rainy Days and Mondays Always Get Me Down, A Pirate Looks at 40, Running on Empty is always a good one. You know what I mean? I'm sitting there and I'm drinking. I'm thinking about all those women that did me wrong, you know, them bitches, you know. And I'm thinking about my funeral. Tony, you don't know what it's like. I'm thinking about my funeral. I'm dead, you know, because of what they did to me and how they treated me. And there's the funeral and all them bitches are around the coffin. And they feel like shit, as well they should, because they know how they treated me. I'm not actually dead, by the way. I'm behind the tree, watching the whole darn thing. You know, I think when you get to that point, I think there's a problem. I'm personally thinking there's a problem at that point, you know? I mean, I'm not crashing cars or getting DUIs. I'm just nuts. And alcohol has little to do with it because I can't stop drinking. But you want to know something? You know, I'm eating. The bottom line is that I'm crazy. And I don't even realize how crazy I am. So there's obviously a lot of things that happen. I'm not going to go into that. But I don't want to go over my... What's the story? What do I have?
It's 2 hours.
Oh, it's 2 hours. Go for it. So in any event, so the bottom line is, I'm going to go straight forward. I got to a point in my life where I divorced my wife. There's so much shit I can tell you about how I treated. I came home drunk that night, and she kicked me out. Well, this is what I didn't understand. When she said, come on one more time, I'm leaving you, that's not the way it worked. She kicked me out of the house. I apparently left her, you know, but you wanted some. As I'm walking in the car, leaving my house on Miami Beach on the golf course and my wife and my child and everything that should have been important to me, I was ecstatic. I don't have to come home. I can go to the bar. I can date them women, you know? I didn't have the guts to tell my wife I wanted a divorce. I mean, let me tell you something. I met her. I was like 21 years old or something like that. She walked into a college course. She had legs up here. She was a cheerleader. I said, man, if I could only have her, everything would be okay. Y'all ever say to yourself, I can only have that blouse, my life? My life could be, don't you understand? I knew that my life, my entire life would change if I could only have that car. I went down one day and I plunked down $8,000 on the first Camaro that came into Miami in 1970, and I knew my life was going to change. And I got that car and they said, come back tomorrow. I said, no, I want it now. He said, no, we got to prep it. No, you don't have to prep it. You paid for it. We got to prep it. And I came down that next morning, that Saturday morning at 8 o'clock to get that car. And I got in that car, man, and everything changed for me. You know, I knew I was okay now with that brand new Camaro, gold with a white Landau top. And I drove down Alton Road, and I knew the entire world was, I knew every woman in China was looking at me. You know what I mean? There, I knew everybody. I had the shirt on. I was about 150 pounds less than I am right now. I was buff. I had a cigarette in my life, my mouth. I had my sleeves rolled up with a cigarette pack in there. I had the sunglasses on, you know what I mean? I'm just waiting for them to be discovering me, you know? I knew they were all looking at me. I was waiting to be discovered. I stopped, you know, some, I don't need alcohol to be drunk. I walk in a bar with a good looking gal and they're all looking at me. I'm high as a kite. You know what I mean? Everything makes me high, you know, and I'm going after it. And so I'm driving down that thing and I stop at the red light. And all of a sudden some guy drives up next to me in a brand new Cadillac convertible. Some old fat bastard. Probably looks like me right now, you know. Sitting next to him is the Playboy bunny. I look at him, he looks at me. I look at him, he looks at me. I say to myself, why can't I have a car like that? Yeah, the feeling lasted 3 blocks. The payments lasted 36 months. That kept me coming back for more. Every year I had to get a new one. You know what that is, by the way? That's alcoholism. Why don't you figure out how to get rid of the envy and the lust? Why don't you try to get rid of the lust of the things of this world? Why don't you try to figure out how to get rid of that stuff? Because every time you're feeling depressed and sorry for yourself and fucked up sober, it's because of the stuff of this world. Figure out how to not lust after the stuff of this world. Figure out how to not lust after or be dependent upon people and their approval. Figure out how to not do that. Then I'll tell you whether you're sober or not. Figure out how to stop complaining about what you don't have. Figure out how the only thing that's important to you in your life is helping other people. Figure out, like it says, that we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. You figure out what that's all about. Figure out what that's all about while you're trying to figure out how not to do the God thing, because you know it's bullshit because we're spiritual, not religious. When all the founders were religious as shit, you know? Figure out how, when it says there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now, how to water that thing down. Figure out how, when it says you got to utterly give yourself, abandon yourself to God. Figure out when it says we're on a new base, the base of trust relying upon God, where it says we never apologize for God. We never apologize. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize. We let him demonstrate to life who we are. Figure out when it says all that stuff. Bill Wilson says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. Cure me of this terrible disease. I got to keep talking about it and helping other people. Figure out what Dr. Bob says. If you have some sort of pride, intellectual pride, that keeps you from understanding what the hell we're trying to tell you, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. Figure out how when the book says, there is one who has all power, that one is God. How when the book says, and Bill Wilson says in his story, he says, but I still hated God. I still hated God. I had an antipathy towards God. I couldn't bring myself to believe in God because the hackles in my neck grew up. And like it says in the chapter of Gnostics, and then his friend says to him, he says, well, if you can't love God, if you can't do it, if you can't do the God thing, then why don't you just use your own conception of God as a compromise? As a compromise. Some people never get off of the compromise. You know, this is a spiritual kindergarten. They actually think that's the deal. But I will promise you this. You will get out of this. This ain't a dress rehearsal. And you will experience and get out of this thing to the extent that you basically abandon yourself and you surrender yourself to this thing. And now you're in an AA meeting where it says once you make that sincere decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, it'll give you everything you need. Everything you need, if you stay close to him and perform his work well. And his work is to love other people and help other people. So figure out how you're going to do that when you have a big book that all it tells you is see to your relationship with him is right and great events will come past you and countless others. And you got a group of, I don't know, I love the fellowship, but I want to tell you something, it ain't Well People's Anonymous. When you have a group of people and you're surrounded by people that you feel, you get the clear indication as you're sitting here that if you talk about God, they're not going to like you. And then understand that one of the consequences of being alcoholic is you need to be liked by other people, and you can't stand if somebody doesn't like you. That's one of the problems. I said to my sponsor once, you ever get resentments? He says, get them. I give them. I said, how could you do that? I couldn't stand it if I thought people didn't like me. You know? So figure out how you're going to get this thing when you have this marvelous fellowship that gives you the clear indication that they're so superior to religious people that they're spiritual, not religious. I'm religious and spiritual, and one evil son of a bitch. You know something? Because I know who I am. And I know without God in my life, and without my focus on Him, and you know what the great fact says? You do know what the great fact says if you want to be rotten. It says God has to be the central fact of your life. You've got to be convinced that He lives in your heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's going to do for you what you can't do for yourself. And that's very hard to do when you're more worried about what the guy sitting next to you is thinking about you, who's not even paying your Visa bill. And you're trying, and you get the clear indication that maybe the God thing isn't the way to go. I'll just be God as I understand them. And maybe you want to consider the possibility that the God that they say, what do they say? There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. You may want to consider the God that has all power, the one God that has all power. You may figure out the possibility that that God, whatever the God is that they're talking about, that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were talking about, may be different than the God of your understanding. That there may be actually a difference between the God of your meager understanding and the God that has all power. Maybe, you know, that there's a possibility that your mind might limit God. And limit God to the extent that you never experience any of these promises, except maybe a little bit of the not drinking thing. And so you think you're on the right track because if you're all they celebrate is the not drinking. But you're not willing to do the extra credit shit or the tough stuff to grow the fuck up. Maybe that's what you ought to think about. You know? Am I done here? I thought, what is it? When did I start?
Tuesday.
Seven. Well, I started at 7? Oh. So in any event, so one of the, I don't know, it takes time. Sometimes I'll be sponsoring somebody else, say, well, they'll tell me about a problem they're having. They got about 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. I'll say, hey, don't worry about it. You'll be okay in 20 years. But you got nothing better to do. So I'm going to tell one story. We got like 10 minutes left. I have a 10-minute story. I'm going to tell the Leo story. So this is a true story. When I was 10 years sober, now listen, don't get offended. Well, get offended. Shit. You know, get offended. It's not going to bother me, you know. You'll be walking out of here hating my guts, saying, I hate that guy. Who the hell invited him? And I'll be going to have, you know, steak or something like that with the guy. But in any event, so when I was 10 years sober, I'm just going to tell you, this is my life. And this is the life of most of the people I know who have 30, 40 years. Doesn't necessarily have to be your life, but this is my life. There will come a time in your life where if you don't grow spiritually and you don't surrender more, you will get to the point where you will stay sober to a certain amount of time, but soon you will not be happy with your sobriety. In Vision View, they say here and there, once in a while, a person will try the moment. Alcohol drive, you know, says feel better, look better, have a better time. We smile at such Sally. You know, he'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. No, he'll know sooner, no loneliness as you do. And you won't even realize it's happening because one of the incredible things about, I used to say to my sponsor, oh, I have these mean sponsors. I'll talk to you about that later. Mean sponsors. I used to say to my sponsor, I said, I'm sent because they treated me nasty. They were nasty. Nasty, you know. And I said to my sponsor, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touching. It's different. But here's the incredible thing. Although we are sensitive, the interesting thing about alcoholics is we can live the most incredible, miserable, horrible life and think we're okay and put up with it. It's amazing how horrible our lives can be, how terrible it can be, and we sort of think that's the way it is. We don't think anything else because our alcoholic life seems normal to us. We can't separate the truth from the false. So no matter how horrible we feel like we're doing okay because we've never felt anything but this. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a pretty incredible thing. So somewhere around 10 years, so that's what happens with sobriety. You get to a certain point where you're not drinking, you're handing your medallions, you're sponsoring people, you're doing all the work and everything like that, and you're not happy. But you don't know you're not happy. You just feel like you're doing okay. And sometimes you are happy. You have good times. And AA is good and it's wonderful and it's better than it was before. but you're certainly not experiencing the deal. One time you'll run into somebody, you'll see somebody like I did with Al Kennedy. You'll see, I don't know what to tell you, an Eskimo, you'll see the deal. You'll see somebody who has been rocking the fourth dimension. You'll say, what the fuck was that? I want a little of that stuff. You'll see an Al Kennedy who's dying of cancer, giving a meeting and talking to people and saying, man, I want to hang up with that guy. That guy's incredible. Somebody will say, well, you know, he's dying of cancer. And you'll say, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke at the meeting. He says, he's dying of cancer. He's got 6 months to live. I said, he didn't say anything about dying of cancer. And I just spent 3 weeks talking about a hangnail. You know what I mean? This guy's dying of cancer. He's got 6 months to live, and he's doing a meeting. He's trying to help other people, and he's happy as a clam. It's like he just won the lottery. You say, what the hell is that shit? And you realize there's a difference between not drinking and sober, because all I do is complain and worry about myself. So when I was about 10 years sober, I got to a point in my life where things weren't going so good. You wouldn't know if you saw it, because I was talking around the meetings. I was finding some people. I was doing all this stuff. And alcoholics have a lot of tremendous amount of pride, you know, so then I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell anybody, you know. And I'm going to try to fix it myself with my brain, you know, my brain power and that kind of thing. And by 10 years, you know, I get double digits, and I wasn't doing well. And to make a long story short, the result of that, ultimately, I wound up in a Bible study. And I'm not going to go into all that, maybe later or something like that. I wound up into that, which led to a whole other different deal. And you can look at the book where they encourage church membership and all that stuff, and we'll talk about that maybe some other time when we talk about maintenance and growth of a spiritual condition and getting closer to God and stuff like that. But in any event, so I've had about 15 years sobriety, and I go to this, my house. I'm in a new house now, but I'm in a house by a dry cleaner. By the dry cleaner, if you drive into the dry cleaner, you can actually see my house. You can see the roof of my house. And I drive into this dry cleaner. And in my car, you know, at that time, you know, I would have all these books. I would have a big book, and I have a big book. I have a 12 and 12. I'd have the Holy Bible, you know, but I mean one big sucker, you know, a King Jimmy Bible, you know, King James, you know, big red. You could hit somebody with that, kill him. You know what I mean? It'd be a big Bible there and all sorts of stuff. And I'm driving around, and I pull up to the dry cleaner, and there's this kid there, and he's like 16 years old, 17 years old, I don't know, and he's wearing his pants down to his knees. Has anybody ever seen this? I don't see it so much now, but back then, you know, he was wearing his pants. I don't even know what holds him up. It's like the belt is like 6 inches above his knees, and he's going like this. He says, hey, and he goes, hey man. He says, I said, what's your name? He says, Leo, my name's Leo. I said, hey, nice to meet you, Leo. How you doing, buddy? He says, fine. He says, you know, I got one of those. That's how he points like this. He says, I got one of those. One of those. He pointed. I said, you mean a Bible? He says, yeah, I got a Bible. I got one of those. He says, I said, you ever read it? And he says, you know, the God of my understanding says I try to love and help everybody. You don't have to have a dime in your pocket for me to help you. So, I said, you ever read it? He says, well, I try to read it. It's hard to read. I said, hey, I'll tell you what. I said, you see that house over there? He says, yeah. He says, every Thursday morning at 7:30, I go to a Bible study with a bunch of men and everything like that. If you are at my house, you know, like 7 o'clock, 7:15, at my house there next Thursday, he says, which is the next day. It was next day tomorrow. He says, I'll take you to Bible study. He says, really? He says, absolutely. I'll be happy to do it. He says, thanks a lot. And I leave. It's a true story. You can't make this shit up. You can't really. You could, but. So I leave and I go around and do my stuff. I forget all about Leo, you know. And I wake up the next morning, I go out to go to my Bible study, which has a bunch of recovery people there. But, and about 20 guys, men, between the ages of like, you know, 25 and 90. 90 guys that have been studying the source material, because I'm sure you guys know if you read Dr. Bob Goodoldtimer's. The books that they found absolutely essential during the first 4 years of AA, when there wasn't any big book, was 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. The Romans called the James Club. So I know you guys know that those are the books they read. The whole thing comes out of the Bible. Be that as it may, the bottom line is, when I started doing that, the big book became like technical, but
the bottom line is, so when I pulled up, when I went outside, standing by my car is Leo. Leo. Hey, how you doing? He says, fine. He says, hey, you made it. I said, okay, get in the car, we're going. So I go over to the Bible study and with the four, you know, there's like 20 guys here, 25 guys here. And Leo sits there, he's like 16 years old. You know, these guys are like 40 to 90 years old. He's like, they're looking at this kid, you know, he's like red meat, you know what I mean? He's like, you know, they're looking at this kid like they love him. They just love the fact that he's there. So it goes around, I don't even know what we talked about, whatever, who knows what we talk about. This is like conservative. And finally gets, and Leo, at the last minute, raises, he says, I think Jesus was an alien. These guys are really serious, you know. These are serious guys. And, you know, they look at him, and they say, yeah, he's an alien. Keep coming back. That's what they say. They say, keep coming back. We love you. You know what I mean? Because they're the real deal. They love them. You know what I mean? They love them. He could do no wrong. So I drive him. I go to drive him back. And he says to me, could you do me a favor? I said, what? He says, could you drive me to my house? I said, sure. You just direct me how to do it. And I start driving him. He's telling me his story. And he's a 16-year-old kid. And his mom works, you know. And he... So he says, well, go back to your house. And then he says, and make a left. And I make a left. And he says, well, drive down to the stop sign, make a right, make a right. He says, drive over here, make a left, and you know, make a right, make a left, make a right. So we're about 6 or 7 miles away from my house. And he says, that's my townhouse over there. Pull up there. So I pull up there, and I said, man, it's good to see you. I said, how'd you get to my house? And he said, so. He woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he walked to my house. Because he got there early, actually, he didn't want to be late. And I got guys that asked me, like, how can I do this thing? And I said, well, you got to go there. He said, well, that's kind of far. I'll do a step series up in Boca Raton. He says, will you be my sponsor? He said, well, you know, I'm a little far away, but I'm happy to do it. He says, what do I do? He says, come on down. We're going to have a workshop at my house down in Miami. He says, well, you know, it's kind of far. I said, I know. I just drove it to give this message to you. So I'm always looking for the Leos. You know, there's the Leos and then there's the pretenders. If you're going to deal with alcoholics, you're going to deal with a lot of pretenders, a lot of phony belongings. You know, you're going to deal with a lot of that shit, you know. Sometimes the pretenders can become the real thing. You never know. You know what I mean? So thank you very much. God bless you.